Did you know there's an online cannabis company that ships federally legal THC right to your door? And they found a way to combine THC with carefully selected functional ingredients to create gummies, baked goods, and flower for whatever type of buzz you'd want. I'm talking about Mood.com. They have an incredible line of cannabis gummies, and you get 20% off your first order at Mood.com with promo code SPECIALISTS with an S on the end. This isn't some rinky-dink discount of 5 or 10%. This is 20% off your first order. Forget one-size-fits-all supplements that only get you high. Mood's functional gummies are optimized to kick in as little as 15 minutes and take you to the mood you're looking for. My favorite are the Sleepy Time Advanced gummies. That's right, those are for sleepy time. You know when you just can't fall asleep? Take these and they'll put you right in the mood. Beyond gummies, Mood also has a selection of flower, pre-rolls, bakery treats, and beverages. Listen, you can find gummies to just get you high pretty much everywhere these days. But Mood's functional gummies combine premium, federally legal THC with targeted botanicals to help you get into the perfect mood, usually in as little as 15 minutes. And everything ships discreetly right to your door. No dispensary lines, no awkward conversations, just better days and nights delivered to your doorstep. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with promo code SPECIALISTS with an S on the end. So head to Mood.com, find the functional gummy that matches exactly what you're looking for, and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. And don't forget to use promo code SPECIALISTS when you check out to save 20% on your first order. Try it today at mood.com.
Survivor Specialist John and Kyle are here today rewinding this week's episode of Survivor 49. That's right. McKenna's out gallivanting somewhere across the world right now. And I had to get us up and I had to pick one of our specialists who doesn't get to come on here and talk about Survivor despite his vast knowledge of the show. Kyle, you normally podcast The Amazing Race with McKenna, but here you are on the rewind. Why don't you just like let everyone know your Survivor history?
Yeah, we'll do. Well, McKenna's out there around the world without me, her racing partner. Survivor's my favorite show. I could tell you pretty much anything about it. So my Survivor knowledge is very extensive, and I'm thrilled to be on here with you talking about quite a unique episode. We have quite a task ahead of us, but I think we picked out some very interesting things to talk about.
Yeah, we are really dealing with a kind of a first of its kind episode. We have a few things that we can compare to, and we will throughout this, obviously. But this is a historic moment in Survivor where we're really getting this long look behind production. Like, what's happening behind the scenes with this movie? It's the first time we've ever seen Base Camp. It's the first time we've ever seen, like, the book. Mm-hmm. And it's quite a scary moment, in all honesty, right? Like, we have been told for the last 25 years how dangerous sea crates are, and we finally have a moment where someone actually gets bitten by one. But overall, Kyle, just 3 weeks into Survivor 49, how are you feeling about the season so far?
I think it's okay so far. I like the cast. That's never a problem with the Survivor season. I do think we're in a familiar spot where we have the same tribe losing over and over. Having a swap next week is really going to brighten the season up. We're going to see new people going to tribal. So I've liked the first few episodes, but I think this is really where we're going to be put to the test and see, is it a good season? Who's here to play and who's not?
I know I've seen, like, I mean, if you listen to Phil and Will talk about it the other day, or I guess that was yesterday. But if you listen to them talk about it, like, Phil has his concerns. Like, this is the fifth season out of the last six that we've had this disaster tribe. It's kind of the same narrative over and over again. But I'm kind of looking at this now as kind of the close of a story arc of what we're dealing with when it comes to this season of Survivor. And it's unfortunate that we've had that same story arc several seasons over. We get this little bit of a variation here with a medevac into a complete decimation of a tribe. But overall, like, there's so much promise in what's going on here. The problem is that, as Phil says, like, the edit seems to be leading us a very particular way, which is a little concerning. So we'll see how relevant everything gets. At least we're getting a full tribe swap next week. We're going to get some variance in what's going on, but it does make us kind of wonder, what is the last 3 weeks really meant then, right?
That's the issue, is that nothing of what we've just seen is really going to end up mattering unless Sophie and Alex end up, you know, being, you know, going really, really deep in the game. But you're right that this is an interesting version of the disaster tribe, because the person who was running the tribe, really, Jake, gets taken out not by a vote. And so usually that person would be dictating how these votes are going. But in this episode, it was like three separate people trying to figure it out. So this was one of the more unique situations we've seen with a small tribe, in my opinion.
Absolutely. And let's get into that right away, because our outwit moment is just navigating these known idols in these small situations, because it's something we don't normally get. We're in a very rare situation here in this week of, or this episode of 49, because when do we ever get a point where there's three people in an active idol that everyone knows about on top of that?
Not very often. And especially when you don't have two people who are really working together. Shan had the idol in 41. And that was public, because at least Jeannie had found the Beware advantage, and then Shan went back to go get it. But Shan was the one deciding between the two. She didn't need to play it. This is a situation where Alex, he didn't need to play it either, but I think anybody in that situation would have done the same thing.
I absolutely agree. I think we talk about it a lot on the specialist, right? Like sometimes, and Phil and Will again talked about it yesterday in the recap, like this is a technical incorrect idol play. It does not nullify a majority of votes. However, you have to guarantee yourself your way to the next step of the game, especially at this point, because you have to assume, you have to hope that there is a swap coming. If not, you know that there's at least a merge coming soon, right? Like, I mean, throughout the entire new era, we've been doing mergatory at 13. So, I mean, presumably, there's only one more vote before we hit that point anyways. And, yeah, there's a lot of, like, theory behind it when it comes to Alex. And should he play the idol? Should he not play the idol? The safest thing, of course, is for him to play the idol. It gives him the most agency. That way, then, if Sophie and Jeremiah do both decide to put their votes on him, he gets the sole decision of who he's going with. And it's actually really funny, I think, Kyle, because, and before we get into our examples of like other moments where we've been navigating these idols, I think this is the perfect culmination for the new era, because we have finally gotten to the point where there's a prisoner's dilemma that actually matters.
It did. It did actually matter. This was a really interesting situation to analyze with only three people, but there's so much nuance to it, specifically from Sophie's perspective, in my opinion, because I think her optimal strategy, no matter what, was to vote for Jeremiah, whether Alex plays the idol or he doesn't. That's just the optimal strategy, because if he plays it, you vote with him, and he knows that you're with him. And if not, well, then maybe he votes for you. Maybe you tie it up. You know, we could have gotten a 1-1-1 or something like that. So yeah, this was a really fascinating situation despite the small numbers.
Yeah. And because of that, our examples have to have larger numbers, because we just don't have, there are not many times we only have three people at a tribal council. Like, yes, there are in the earlier seasons when it's like the end of the game, but those, there's more nuance to that. There's more things going on there, right?
And one person had individual immunity. This is a situation, a rare situation where three people are completely vulnerable unless they play their idol to save themselves.
Exactly. So let's talk about one of these idol situations. Let's go to Ghost Island, and it's the split tribal of Ghost Island. Donathan has a very public idol. I mean, I can't remember exactly how many people know about it, but at least a few people know about it.
Yeah, I think all the Malolos knew about it.
Yeah, and because of that, like, there's a lot of conversation about people wanting to borrow the idol, right? Like, Michael asked to borrow the idol of that tribal council, and then
Jenna asks Jenna for Donathan asks, to play.
Yeah, like Jenna tries to get Donathan to play it for her instead, so that they can vote out Donathan, because she thinks the plan is Donathan, but the plan is actually Jenna. This is one of those instances where I think it's really similar to what we saw from Sophie in this episode, where Sophie is navigating this situation where it's like, ideally for Sophie, I do think ideally for Sophie, Alex doesn't play his idol, Alex goes home here.
Yes.
Right? But because there's the nuance of the situation and stuff. And she doesn't even vote for Alex. She votes for Jeremiah because I think she was pretty convinced Alex was playing his idol here and there was no point in voting for Alex. This way, she's convinced him to get that idol out of there. So she has that advantage. And then not, you know, pissing Alex off by voting for Alex in this situation in case something does go wacky, right? This Donathan situation is so interesting because of just the dynamics in Ghost Island.
Yeah, the dynamics in Ghost Island for most of it was kind of black and white, where you have this Navidi and Malolo divide, but this was a situation with two Malolo to pick from. And you're sitting there, you're Donathan with an idol. All the Navidis are telling you it's Jenna. And so to me, this is similar to what Alex was in right now, where he didn't need to play that idol on himself. What people were telling him was the truth. But anyone in his situation would have done the same thing, because you're in a small tribe scenario. You know your name is on the block. You know people know that you have an idol. So really, it would look kind of spewy to not play it. Like, it would just look... you know, like, what are you doing? Because if you know if you're wrong, you're never going to be able to live with yourself.
While watching the episode, I legitimately texted Phil and said, if Alex doesn't play his idol here, it's the worst non-idol play in Survivor history. I was very happy. And it's just because, and not even if he does get to keep it, right? Like, we can't use the confirmation bias there. It's just way too risky not to play your idol in this situation when you have a 1 in 3 chance of going home.
Oh, yeah. And the other two had a tight relationship. I don't know if Alex knew how tight it was, but how could you take that risk, you know?
And I think we do have to give credit to the editors a little bit, because I think they did spend some time last week showing us the potential of an Alex Jeremiah thing at the end of last week's episode to kind of like foreshadow this, to make it a little more suspenseful here. But it did kind of always feel like Alex was going to side with Sophie in this situation.
Yeah.
And what's really fascinating about this in comparison to that Ghost Island situation is Donathan has no power in that situation, because it is five people instead of three.
Yep.
He has the idol. He doesn't even end up voting for Jenna in that situation. He ends up voting for Sebastian.
Right. He votes for Sebastian because he thinks him and Jenna are going to idol out Sebastian, whereas Jenna is actually voting for Donathan, which is a questionable move on Jenna's behalf, but that's a different story. So, yeah, you had two people who on the bottom who were split. So it's not exactly the same scenario. Obviously, nothing is similar to the one that we just saw. But from the Donathan and Alex comparison, that's where my mind immediately went. When you didn't need to play it, but when your worst case scenario was like complete disaster, looking like one of the worst moves of all time, then that's the only justification personally that I would need to play that.
And we spent so much time on previous podcasts just discussing, especially these split tribals, because we get them so often in the new era, right? We get them every single season now. That's the time to play your advantages, because it's the most, it's the most vulnerable you're going to be in most situations.
And so, in this new era, the long run doesn't get there anymore. This is really a step-by-step type of game where you just need to be getting to the next step. As much as you would want to hold on to that idol for later down the road, that's not how it is anymore. You just need to keep yourself in the game, because there's always something around the corner that could benefit people on the bottom.
Absolutely. And I mean, if we look at idol plays recently in the new era too, right? Like, I still think we're living at a point where, yes, 49 goes out there. They've seen the first like couple of weeks of 48 at this point. But 46 is still fresh in all of our minds when it comes to idols and not playing them. And I think like there's this greed. And I think it is what kind of makes this episode a little more compelling than it should be, seeing three people go to tribal council. But you have Alex just in this situation where technically he could hold his idol. It could be really good for him moving forward. But is it more valuable than not having an ally? Right? Like, that's, I think, where it really comes down to, is like, how much more can you be trusted if you just play it here?
Yeah, I don't think that you lose any trust by playing it, because Sophie's not going to say, Alex, how could you not believe me? You know, maybe she could say that because, you know, just benefit of the doubt. But And yeah, she knows that Alex needed to play it. And if Alex didn't have this, like, he's gone.
He's gone. Yeah, like, absolutely. He's in a terrible position without this idol. He's just very lucky that Sophie didn't steal his idol last week.
Exactly.
While they were all hunting for it together. And I think that's also what's interesting about this Donathan situation, because it's the known quantity of the idol. And we talk about it a lot. We've talked about it a lot about, do you tell people about your idols? And production has told us, you have to tell people about your idols. In this situation, to get this idol, you had to have people helping you.
They encourage it now.
In that case, when we compare it to Donathan, right, it's a known quantity. Donathan might as well flush it. It kind of lowers your threat level a little bit. Like, it just makes it so that, especially in that situation where you have a mixing of tribes afterwards, and yes, okay, it's a split tribe, like they're going back to a merged tribe, but there's knowledge out there that can be disseminated, right? Like, in this case, if Alex has the idol still, and Sophie survives, he doesn't play the idol, that's giving Sophie leverage in the form of knowledge in the game, right? Like, the power that comes from having that knowledge and be able to tell people in a situation, like, you don't know what's happening here. You don't know if it is a swap. You don't know if they're going to run this challenge with just the two of you. You don't know if they are going to, like, dissolve you like they do in Philippines.
Right. And suppose you do get down to a two-person tribe and you happen to lose, like, for instance, Oolong did, and they went to fire making. Well, an idol probably isn't going to save you. Like, are you going to be able to actually get up and say, Jeff, I'm playing this idol to save myself from the vote tonight? Well, there isn't going to be a vote. So what good is that idol going to do you? And if you know there's a swap, or you think there is, and we see that there is one, I don't think you'll need it at the swap. Someone like Alex is a hot commodity at the swap. It's perfect for him. So you're not even going to need an idol there.
Yeah. And well, we made the mention of Philippines here. Let's talk about the boot of the winner of Philippines from her second season. Let's go to Winners at War, because this is kind of another situation where we're dealing with a known quantity when it comes to an idol. And that is the presumed known quantity of Tony knowing that Natalie must have an idol coming back from the edge of extinction, because we've seen it before. It happened two seasons prior. It's happened in the season that literally tested out the twist, right? They come back with an idol. So you gotta presume they have an idol.
Yes.
And Tony tries so hard to convince everyone, Natalie has an idol. Natalie has an idol. Let's just, like, split these votes. We've got it. Come on. We can just put the votes on. Yeah, right? Easy. Put the votes on Michelle. We're fine. And
well, let me stop you there.
Michelle had the immunity echoes there.
Yeah.
But, like, put the votes on Denise.
But Denise, yeah, don't worry about it. Yeah.
Yeah. And Tony's kind of doing this from a selfish perspective at Final Six, right? Because he and Ben both have hidden immunity idols.
They both have idols.
They know that if the vote goes on to Natalie, they have to play their own idols. So that's an interesting situation that's different than what we have with Alex, where Alex is the only one with an idol. We know Alex is the only one with an idol. But there's still that question of the preservation of idols that comes from it. And it's not Natalie's idol that's being preserved. It's Tony's idol that's being preserved because of the known idol that is Natalie's.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, you want to keep your idol. You want to mitigate your risk so that you can keep all your ammo heading into the final five. And if Michelle didn't have immunity, this would be a much easier scenario for them, because they would just easily split the vote. In this scenario, they would have needed to split the vote onto one of their own alliance members. But still, I mean, you're at the final six. Sarah was really the one holding that plan up. She wasn't in any danger. She didn't really care if those guys burned their idols. So I get it from her perspective. But yeah, from Tony, it's got to be so frustrating to know that you're right and have to kind of be punished for it anyway, because you couldn't get your allies to listen to you.
And that's, I think, where the comparison comes to in this week of 49. It's not the fact that, you know, the right or wrong or knowing what's going on, right? Alex knew he had to play his idol no matter what. It's the fact that you're at a point in the game where you have to burn an idol. It's the safest thing for you to do is to burn this idol from someone else just to see what happens, just to make it so that they don't have that protection later. And that's where I think that vote in Winners at War really comes into effect here, because it's like, Natalie has this idol. She'll probably play it because she just came back from this game, but we can't risk her not playing it.
Right. It is a situation where you have to burn an idol that you don't want to, but sometimes you're in positions where you have to do something that you don't want to. Like if you're in a sport, you know, sometimes you have to stop the clock. You would like to save that for when you have the ball. But if your opponent's running out the clock, sometimes you have to burn a timeout, even though you didn't want to, but you needed it in that situation. And that's the same way here. You can't always use the idols just when you want to. They are safety nets for situations such as this.
Exactly. Let's move on to our outplay moment. And this is interesting because I mentioned it earlier. This is our fifth time in six seasons, which is conveniently how long we've been doing the rewind that we've had a disaster tribe. So we can't just talk about disaster tribes over and over again, but we kind of have to in some sense. But we're going to talk about it in a very different way this time. We're going to talk about it in our outplay section. And it's the idea of like sitting out more than half of your tribe, like half or more of your tribe. Because this is something that we don't see very often despite these disaster tribes, right? Like we get there. I mean, we do see it. But this is an interesting situation because we're in week three of Survivor. You're not supposed to be sitting out half your tribe at this point because there's supposed to be only two people gone, not three.
Yeah. We're starting this really early on. And even with some of our other disaster tribes like Uwa, Yase had already been to tribal twice. So they only had to sit out. I guess they did sit out half their people with the, they only had to sit out one person. Yanu, Brandon had been medevaced. So we don't often see this mass sitting. Like that sit out bench was full in this challenge. It was kind of a hilarious image.
It was. And on top of that, there's because of the change that happened to the rules for sitting out of challenges back in, was that 43? Was it 43 or 44?
44.
44,
Claire,
right?
Was on 44, yeah.
So when Claire sat out of like every
challenge. Didn't play in a challenge.
At all in Survivor. Because for those who don't know, the previous rule for when it came to sitting out of challenges, you couldn't sit out a challenge in a cycle. So a cycle being when a tribal council happens. Once a tribal council happens, it resets the cycle. People can sit out again. That used to matter when we had reward challenges all the time. It doesn't matter in the new era, so they changed the rule. Now you can't sit out back-to-back challenges. That's the official ruling now. Mm-hmm. And because of that, like nobody was thinking, hey, this person we sit out last time is going to matter so much to this, this next one. Because all of a sudden, it goes from, let's just say, Hina sitting out Christina in that last one. But they didn't think that Christina would be only one of three participants in this challenge.
And right.
Of course, I mean, looking at the challenge, it didn't matter at all because Jason can solve a puzzle with like a blindfold on, I'm pretty sure. But it changes the way that you approach the challenge when you're sitting out half of it. Because now, think about it. If they don't swap, like we know they swap because we saw it in the preview. But if they didn't, does the other half of the tribe just come in? Somebody else, somebody who literally just participated in the challenge would actually have to sit out. Somebody who sat out.
Somebody who sat out would have to sit out again. Yeah.
If they're under two, right? And they just run with two. So it changes everything. And yeah, let's just talk about the biggest disaster tribes in Survivor history. Let's talk about Oolong.
Oolong was,
it's just one of those instances where Oolong wasn't a weak tribe. They were winning rewards like the entire season. They just couldn't win an immunity challenge for anything.
Yeah, when you look at their challenge win percentage, it's actually, it's bad, but it's not as bad as someone like Fong. Because, they were winning. They won like three reward challenges at least. And on paper, they look like the stronger tribe to me. You have Jeff Wilson and Jolanda was strong, and you compare it to Karen, Katie, and Willard, you know, on paper, that tribe should have done much, much better in challenges. And yeah.
And I think that's part of like what is so fascinating about Oolong in retrospect now, because it got to a point where Karor had to sit out so many people, Jeff just said, okay, who's actually participating in the challenge rather than asking who's sitting out of the challenge. And there are some instances where he does say who's sitting out still, because when we do get down to three people left in Oolong, the reward challenge is the SOS challenge that they do at camp. So like, he doesn't have to ask who's sitting out or anything like that. And then it's like, hey, the three people who did this last time have to sit out in this next challenge. So who's joining them on the sit out bench? But that's the fascinating thing. And it changes the way you approach it. And I think, I mean, the patron episode we're talking about is this episode of Palau. It's episode 7, the Great White Hunter, Great White Shark Hunter.
Something like that.
It's this episode where Oolong gets down to three people. But the fascinating thing about that episode is Tom and Ian sit out of both challenges.
They didn't even need their two strongest people. I think Greg was the person who participated in the most challenges in this season. And that's a luxury, to say the least, when you could have potentially your third strongest player playing your most challenges and you still dominate.
He doesn't even compete in the immunity challenge in that episode either. And that's, I think, the fascinating thing is when you get to the point where you're sitting out half your tribe, you essentially just have to decide, especially in the new era, right, where it could progress for longer with like having to do this, you're essentially making two teams within your tribe, and you have to balance them out as much as possible.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, you're going back and forth between two groups of people, and you need to make sure that they're balanced. But the thing about that is that you have no idea that that tribe is going to keep losing. So it's like, how can you plan out your teams and who you're running for each challenge when, for all you know, you could be going to travel next? So that's a difficult balanced strike. Obviously they did, but I wonder how much thought there was at camp day to day about what you just said.
Well, I mean, another, maybe a better example then, because it is in a three tribe format, is Philippines, right? With Natsing getting decimated, the other two tribes had to sit out half of their tribes in that, you know, that lovely, lovely immunity challenge where we get the Russell Swan breakdown afterwards. But how do you approach that, right? Like, these tribes are designed to be run specifically. And I think there's been a lot of emphasis on tribe composition this season because Kena has two alternates on it. And it's clearly thrown off tribe composition across all three tribes because it's very clear that tribe is much stronger than it was intended to be because of it.
Yeah, MC looks like a, you know, a G.I. Joe figure. Like, she looks like she's carved of stone.
So it's really interesting. And then when you look at Philippines, how does Calabao and Tandang decide who sits out of these challenges? Because that was still a time period where occasionally you still had reward challenges too.
Yeah, and obviously you want your weaker players playing in the reward challenges so that you have your stronger squad ready for the immunity. I wonder if it gets to the point sometimes where these tribes are winning so much that they really start to get lax about their thought process, where they're like, well, we haven't lost yet. We're probably not going to lose. You know what I mean? We just know that we're going to keep winning. And if everybody on the tribe has that mindset, then maybe you don't really care who you send out there.
Yeah. I think when it comes to 49 this week, there was a bit of a luxury in the fact that again, there's only one challenge per cycle, makes it easy. And be like, Hina can literally just put Jason on a puzzle again. It's like, that's fine. We just run Jason again.
Yeah, just run Jason every time. They would have Christina playing rewards, sitting immunities. So it does this rule, I think, hurts or should in theory be hurting these tribes more with who they have to be playing in these challenges. And yet somehow it's not making much of a difference.
I think Hina gets lucky here that it goes from sitting one person out to sitting three people out because there's no repercussions, right? Like, because it is all of a sudden and it's like, okay, whatever. We can run the same people we just ran in that last challenge. It would be more interesting if this went another time and then they had to sit people out.
Yeah. Or if Jake had played reward challenge, if they had one and then got medevaced. So you had a weird number of sit-outs. Yes. I wonder how that would have changed things too.
Yeah. Okay. We've hinted at it enough. You just brought up Jake. Let's get this out.
Let's segue.
We're going to talk about Pete Bjennecker. We talked about medevacs before, and we don't really want to just talk about medevacs because, I mean, when it comes down to it, there are two medevacs we can talk about in this situation. And we are going to talk about one of them because it is our first instance of really peeking behind the curtain when it comes to Survivor. But I mentioned it at the top of the podcast, this idea of, like, seeing base camp. This thing that, like, we all know is there. Mm-hmm. But we've never seen it on screen before. It's the fact that there's this book that we know survivors have. It's been referenced by survivors before, right? I believe Kelly Wentworth posted hers on Instagram today from one of her previous seasons. Like, she still has it. Like, these are things that are there, and it makes sense because if you're just casually watching Survivor, you have to think they have to be educated about what's going on here, right? Like, they have to be educated about what they're allowed to eat, what they have to avoid. Things like that. So it's really cool having this moment where we have Survivor show us exactly what it is the castaways are given to inform them about everything around them.
Yeah, I think the fact that we've gone 49 seasons and this is our first instance of seeing the book, to me, demonstrates that that book is really good and that nobody's ever had a problem until now with what's in it. And this was just a freak thing, but you know, they are prepared out there, right? They're prepared for anything. They need you to know everything about what you're getting into so that we as the audience never have to see it or hear about it. And up until now, we haven't really.
Yeah. I mean, we could compare it to like instances of animals injuring people really, but like we don't have that many options of it. We have the shark biting Hatch in All Stars,
yeah, which
is like pretty minor, and what, John Carroll getting stung by a jellyfish.
Yeah.
We don't have many of these animal things that really interact.
Not so really. And really... certainly not to the extent of this, right? Yeah. Like, yeah, it's a totally different animal, if you will.
One might say. And based on what Jeff has said on, like, On Fire and everything, this was all done out of an abundance of caution just because you heard what he said at the challenge, right? Like, they have Fijians on production and like nobody, on Fire, Jeff mentions, they took Jake to a hospital and nobody there had any experience with someone being bit by a sea crane. So they had to send him to Australia.
How insane is that? I mean, how crazy, I mean, that really puts into perspective how freak of an accident this was, even though that thing is apparently super common and comes up to the beach often. We've seen it like on the show, just like swimming around in the B-roll shots. But yeah, this never happens. And the fact that it's 10 times more poisonous than a rattlesnake is absurd because a rattlesnake can be deadly. So I can't even imagine how fast this thing would kill you. Even a dry bite, like I wouldn't trust that there's no poison in that. There could be trace amounts of poison. The point that I wanted to make about this is that I understand why not letting him back in, even just for physical reasons, when you get a shot in the arm and think about how sore your arm is the next day, and then think about a wild creature biting you on the foot with its fangs, and when you need to be standing, running, jumping for 20 more days, no way that thing is going to heal.
Yeah. Exactly. And I mean, again, like we saw all on deck. And I think one thing that was very interesting about what Jeff said on Fire was that they actually lost communication with the boat.
That's crazy.
which is why when Jake's coming to base camp, they're like, oh, my God, is he breathing?
Yeah.
Because they didn't have any communication to say if he was breathing the entire time he was being transported. It was like this freak of everything. But we saw production flying up. Like, we saw how it was all hands on deck in that moment, and it was everyone trying to make sure that Jake wasn't going to die on the show. Let's go back to the first time we've ever seen this happen. Like, we've got to talk about the Australian outback, and we've got to talk about a certain person falling into a fire, and it just being our first real break from the show of Survivor. Yes, that was a time of Survivor where we were talking about like the reality of the situation, and we were really focused on like the social bonds and the social experiment of it all. This was arguably like the scariest moment on Survivor until this week.
Yeah, I think it was. And when you think about how many people were watching the show back then, you know, this was like national news that a man had fallen in the fire. And even though, you know, the show is real, or most people know the show is real, that moment really just brings it the reality of it, of how real it is. Because season one, you know, they were out there, they were starving, but no medical scare really. And then you have this where it's like, this is, they are living out there amongst themselves. Any number of freak things could happen here. And falling in the fire was a pretty extreme one.
And one of the things that's so fascinating about that moment is, like, again, like, it shows the reality of the situation. We see the cameraman's response, right? Like the run after it, the hustle. We have a production member named in that instance, right? Like, it's our first instance of a production member being named. We see the helicopter fly in. Survivor takes that moment, and I mean, maybe it's lucky that we didn't have Jeff Probst like narrating it like he did this Jake incident, because that was probably the weakest part of this entire episode. I couldn't help but laugh as he is standing there talking to a doctor as Jake is like maybe dying, just getting the doctor to explain how Jake might be dying at that instance.
I saw a tweet that Jeff saw the pit sweep at the Emmys, and then now he wants to, you know, make his own episode. We'll see if it gets that Emmy nomination next year. But yeah, the show, at least back then, really made a concerted effort to hide the production aspects of the show. They didn't want to call attention to that at all. And then so when you have Nick Brown saying the name Terry, and you know there's not a contestant named Terry on the season, that's like, what is going on? Like, this is a really serious situation. And today, last night, they really focused in on breaking that fourth wall.
Yeah, and we've had these moments before, right? Like, obviously, another one McKenna and I have talked about before is, like, the Caleb Medevac in Go Wrong, like, right? And we get the zoom out. There are a few moments where we really do get those zoom outs and production acknowledgments. We got the production acknowledgment in 41, just as, like, hey, look, remember, this is a show, and there are people making it just, like, from the coming back from COVID of it all. But I think another one of those very interesting moments that's so different than any other moment we have is in Second Chances, where Tasha is like freaking out in the water and Jeff calls the divers over, because it's one of those things that, again, we as people who are more in tune with Survivor know that these type of people are out there, right? Like, we know exactly how extensive the safety teams are for Survivor, but the casual viewer who's only watching it once a week and not spending hours listening or doing podcasts might not know that for all of these water challenges, there's a team of people in the water there just in case something goes wrong.
Yeah, and it rarely does go wrong. It's very rare that a player is not able to complete a challenge. And this was a scenario where, Tasha was panicking in the water and needed some help. And despite the fact that they're rarely used, like you said, they are out there. You never see them on camera. They do a great job hiding it. So they go through all this effort, every single challenge, to have them ready, but also not ruin that experience for the viewer by showing them. But they are so prepared for when they are needed, and for all of the flaws perhaps that the show has, the safety department is not one of them.
No, absolutely not. And I mean, there's a bunch of liability around it, right? Like, you're putting people in very dangerous situations, so it makes sense. But Survivor's literally gone out of its way to prevent us from seeing the dive teams before, right? Jeff has literally been like, hey guys, go in the water and go fetch your drowning contestant. Like your drowning tribe mate, please.
Right.
Like, they really try hard.
If they don't have to, then they won't show those people.
I think what this whole incident does, and yes, of course, this is a historic moment in Survivor. Right? This is the first time we've ever had, this is probably the most life-threatening potentially life-threatening instance.
Potentially life-threatening, yeah. I mean,
like, obviously, like, Caleb's heat exhaustion was incredibly life-threatening. But this is one where it was like, holy cow, this person might die right now.
He could die instantly from a bite like that. Like, like when you're watching it, it didn't sink in. And then later on, when Jeff put in perspective how poisonous it was like, oh my God, like that could have really been the first death on the show.
Yeah, the secret is one of
for real.
One of the most venomous creatures in the entire world. And also the fact that, like, it was just like there was a lot of luck that co went around it. Obviously, that it was a dry bite was super lucky. The fact that there was a production boat at Kella changing over the cameras at the time it happened. So, like, they just had a boat there already, ready
had to a boat there. Good timing.
Like, yeah, just like all God. Very serendipitous to make sure that Jake is alive and well and gets to, you know, see the birth of his child and and
that was
be there to raise his child.
That was cool. Yeah, that was really great. I liked that update at the end of the episode that really brought it back to, you know, a good time.
Yeah. But also at the same time, right, like this feels like something that the new era has really embraced with this production thing. And I'm very interested to see going forward how much we see this production in the background. Like we've gotten to the point now where we hear producers asking questions, right? Like we had it in the premiere this season where one of the producers asked Sage, can't remember what she asked her, but Sage was asked about, like, it was Sage was burping and was just like,
right.
Oh no, I'm just burping. Right. But we can hear the producers now. Like we're at that point.
Carolyn in 44, the first confessional of the season.
Yeah.
You know, that's obviously super memorable. And outside confessionals, we've seen when like Brandon and Andy went down at the first challenge, you see a lot of production. We saw an IV, you know, so yeah, you're right. They really are, pulling this back intentionally so to show more of that. I don't know how much more extreme it could get than what we saw last night. But like you said, they're probably going to try and push this whenever they get another chance.
Yeah, it feels a bit like Emmy hunting and like hopefully that's not the case.
Absolutely.
Hopefully that's not the case. I actually wonder if they think, hey, we literally can't show production anymore because like we can't top this moment. Like, see if they get the Emmy for this, and if they don't get an Emmy for this, maybe we never see production on the show again.
True, yeah, because there was a little bit of inauthenticity with what went on. As cool as it was to see, yeah, you're right, when Jeff is pulling the doctor aside and all that, you know, that scene I could have done without. But
let's have this nice three-way chat after we already had the chat discussing what was going on to discuss your future in the game, Jake. It was just a little schlocky. Is what it felt like to me. But that brings us to the end of what we were going to talk about. Kyle, do you have any other thoughts on this episode and how it might relate to the past of Survivor?
I don't think so. I think that we covered most of it. You know, I think that this was, like we've said, this is a super unique episode. There's not a lot in the past that we could compare it to because of the vote, the medevac, all of it was a lot of the first of its kind. But I think that we did. I think that we hit on some good moments from the past, and we'll see what it does for the future of Survivor.
Yeah, I'm really excited because this. I have to assume they get rid of the double tribal council episode.
I am hoping
because this is the first time outside of a premiere we have had someone medevac from the game and voted out.
Right, someone else. Yeah. And in 44, the most recent time it happened, instead of the split tribal, they still split them up and had the Matt vote.
Yeah, that's right.
So maybe we'll get something like that again. I really hope not. I hope we just get a straight vote for all the merge votes. But, you know, it's New Era Survivor, so I'm sure there's going to be something.
Absolutely. Well, Kyle, absolute pleasure talking to you as always.
The pleasure was all mine. Thank you for having me on. It was so much fun to talk about this.
Great to get a talk Survivor. You don't talk Survivor on the specialist, but you do talk Survivor. Why don't you just give yourself a plug here?
Oh, wow. Another plug. Well, yeah. So I do have my own YouTube channel called The Matt Chat, not to be affiliated with the specialist Matt Chat, where I talk about a lot of different Survivor topics. Who I think is the best player at each placement, what's the luckiest moment for every winner. And they're a lot of fun. to make. So if you feel like it, go ahead and check it out. But first, check out Matt Chet on the Specialist, and then come on over afterwards.
Well, speaking of Matt Chet on the Specialist, let's just run down what we've got here. Obviously, Phil and Will do their recap every Wednesday after the episode. Phil and Blake went live earlier with Philip Solomon from Dondi for Digging Deeper this week. So that's definitely worth a listen. It's always great when we can get Philip in here. You might notice Kyle has not talked about the Amazing Race today. That's because him and McKenna will be back on Monday this week to recap this latest episode. Tegwith will be doing the Matt Chat on Monday. I'm not sure who her guest is this week, but I'm sure it'll be someone fun. And I'm also not sure who the guest is on the Prediction and Power Rankings this week, but make sure to tune into that because it was great last week having Rachel there with Blake to be able to throw a bunch of shade at Blake for all of his hot takes on Rachel in 47.
And it looks like Bianca and Thomas from Survivor 48 will be on an upcoming episode for episode 4.
So we've got some good stuff here planned out this week. Obviously, become a patron. That way you can listen to Kyle and I talk about Palau, which should be interesting because Palau is such a weird season of Survivor. And every time I go back and visit it, it gets weirder and weirder. You can also listen to Every Season Matters, where they are currently talking about One World. That should be wrapping up, I think, this week. And then they're moving on to brighter days in the Patreon world. Obviously, there's the casting perspective, Q&A, so many other things. Phil's after show. And Tegwith has a weekly show every week, too. There are so many different things on the Patreon. So make sure you check that out. Click the like button. Subscribe to the channel so you know when all of this content's coming live. And we will see you next time.